Welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the third day of December 2019. It's a Tuesday. It's also my sister's birthday. Happy birthday. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Lots of things to talk about. Tons of things to get to. Remember, if you want to enter to win a signed copy of Rich Lowry's book on nationalism, just email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's just that simple. Let me know. Well, just don't send me a random email. Let me know that you want to be included in the drawing, and so it is written, so it shall be done. Oh, lots of stuff to get to. Man, it's tough to get back into the swing of things after a four-day weekend, isn't it? It's just tough. Man, shaking off the cobwebs, but we're back at it and we're doing it. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff to get to and we'll cover all of it. Thank you for sharing and telling a friend, by the way, and the great reviews you guys are writing and all your clever social media posts and stuff like that with links to the podcast. You guys are awesome. You rock. If I had the money, I'd buy you a Christmas gift, but I don't have the money, so I can't buy you a Christmas gift. But I'll send you my gratitude. Like I said, we're going to get to a lot of things, including some ridiculous audio. The news media is very, very upset with Mark Zuckerberg that he's allowing politicians to speak and having faith in the American public to be able to determine what is and isn't true, allowing us to talk amongst ourselves and figure things out on our own. Plus, Joe Biden goes on the No Malarkey tour. God, it's like they strategized. How can we make Joe seem older? I have an idea. Here it is. There you go. No malarkey. Let's get into the dead word dictionary and find something so out of date that only three people left living use this word with any regularity. And then we'll put it on the side of a bus and it'll all be good. Can't make this stuff up. Anyway, we'll get to all of that and more. But first, let me just, you guys, I've gotten emails from you that some of you, I think, are making a mistake when you enter the promo code. When you purchase or you patronize our lovely, lovely sponsors like Ancient Life Oil, ancientlifeoil.com, it's promo code Derek. Just put Derek, my name, D-E-R-E-K, for 10% off. That's right. I'm talking about the CBD oil. My dad was just here for Thanksgiving. Came out with my sister, my brother-in-law, and my niece and her boyfriend. It was a great time, and I got my dad to try CBD oil. My dad has bad knees, bad shoulders, and a bad hip. And then he has one hip that's been replaced. And that had a problem with the surgery, so he doesn't want to have another one. He doesn't want to be laid up for that long either. Since my mom passed away, he lives alone, and he doesn't want to be one of those old guys. He doesn't want to be a burden to anybody. It's ridiculous. You're not a burden, Dad, if you're listening to this. We love you and be happy to have you and help you any way we can. But I got him to try the CBD oil. And he became a believer. He said, yeah, you know what? My hip does feel better. It doesn't, it's weird. He doesn't know how it works, but he's got himself a bottle of CBD oil now, and you can become a believer too. If you don't believe me, you don't have to take my word for it. You don't even have to take my dad's word for it. Just search CBD oil benefits for yourself, and you can see them for yourself. Learn why tens of thousands of your fellow Americans have become believers in the miracle that is CBD oil. And then try it. Go to the best, get the best, the all-organic ancientlifeoil.com. Ancientlifeoil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. Get 10% off your order. 10% off your order just by mentioning, entering my first name. Don't put in Derek Hunter Show. Don't put in Derek Hunter Podcast. Don't put in Daily Caller. Just Derek, and you get 10% off. And if you didn't get the discount, if you entered something else, email me and we can get you hooked up there. But don't forget to go to ancientlifeoil.com. If my dad can become a believer, so can you. Trust me, that was a tough sell. You even get him to try it. And then he ended up leaving with a bottle. So it works. Trust me, it works. Okay, let's get into the news of the day, shall we? The big story that kind of broke last night. I just want to cover this briefly because not much is known about this, even though there is a long, wordy story about it in the Washington Post, is that the Attorney General, the headline screams, Barr, Attorney General Bill Barr, disputes key Inspector General finding about FBI's Russia investigation. You scroll down, it says, Attorney General William P. Barr told Associates he disagrees with the Justice Department's Inspector General on one of the key findings in an upcoming report, that the FBI had enough information in July 2016 to justify launching an investigation into members of the Trump campaign, according to people familiar with the matter. Now, remember, they denied that this was going on for the longest time, and now they're justifying it. The Justice Department's Inspector General Michael Horowitz is due to release his long-awaited findings in a week, but behind the scenes at the Justice Department, disagreement has surfaced about one of Horowitz's central conclusions on the origin of the Russia investigation. The discord could be the prelude to a major fissure within the justice or within federal law enforcement on the controversial question of investigating a presidential campaign. If you're launching an investigation into a presidential campaign, you damn well better have something more than George Papadopoulos allegedly saying something at a bar one time. There better be more to it than that, especially when you find out all the people who fed him that information and how they were tied to various intelligence communities around the world. Because I think the biggest scandal, and I don't know that the Inspector General's report will follow this or even really touch on it, but I suspect that the Justice Department criminal probe will, especially when you have sort of a free trade agreement amongst intelligence agencies around the world, friendly intelligence agencies for the most part, I would assume, the UK, Italy, Australia, where we as Americans, our intelligence agencies cannot spy on Americans, cannot really entrap Americans, not legally anyway. But with the help, back channeling, and nudging of foreign intelligence services, can sort of push people, nudge people, nose people in that way. Whereas if you and I were having a phone conversation and we're both Americans, provided you're not one of the international listeners, and we're both Americans, the CIA cannot listen in on that conversation, not without serious, significant reasons for it and getting a FISA warrant, which in theory is tough to get, but in practice is pretty easy to get. Most of them that they apply for are actually approved. But in theory, they wouldn't be able to spy on us. But they could say, hey, you know, British MI6, if you could listen to this guy Derek Hunter's phone conversations, we would really appreciate that. We can't legally. And you can tell us if there's any interesting tidbits of information in there. They put me on their radar, then suddenly a foreign intelligence service can spy on me according to their laws in their country. And then MI6 will call up and say, hey, you know what? We got this guy over here. We want to know what he's saying, but we can't really spy on him either because of our stupid laws. So would you mind spying on him? And they create this sort of free trade agreement that we get spying on their citizenry by proxy. That happens all the time. That appears to have happened here in this case. I don't expect that to be resolved when it comes to the Inspector General's report. I expect that to be resolved when it comes to the actual criminal investigation, considering the Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney who are conducting that investigation have actually traveled to Italy twice to speak to members of various intelligence services. That, to me, seems like a very, very important thing to do, to really find out the origins of this, because George Papadopoulos drunkenly claiming something in a bar should not be enough to launch a spying campaign or an investigation into political rivals. It's kind of funny. The Obama administration and the Clinton administration, with the help of Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele, managed to launch a spying campaign against the Trump campaign. They launched this whole spying apparatus using the power of the federal government and the resources of the federal government to investigate Donald Trump's campaign. Donald Trump brings up Joe Biden in a phone call with the Ukrainian president, and all presses are stopped. It's an outrage and a threat to our very democracy. But the entire intelligence community, working together with other members of intelligence communities around the world, is no big deal. Not even worth an investigation, and Democrats will poo-poo the idea as some bizarro world conspiracy theory. It'll be interesting. Now, we've been seeing a lot of things come out about this Inspector General's report, and that's why I take this Washington Post story with a bit of a grain of salt, because a lot of the stories that we've been hearing come out about this Inspector General's report are cherry-picked tidbits of information, and we're seeing the beginnings of a preemptive campaign to try and undercut whatever is eventually in this thing. Yesterday, Lisa Page came out. She did her first ever interview. She did it with the Daily Beast. She went over there to a talentless hack who despises Donald Trump, who of course works for Bill Kristol's website, because that's the way things work. And she made herself out to be the victim. She didn't touch on a lot of things because she would have had to have been asked about a lot of things. And Molly Jong Fast, the stenographer for the Daily Beast, isn't going to ask any serious questions, any tough questions. She just let Lisa Page go on about how Donald Trump is so inappropriate for bringing up the biggest mistake she ever made in her life, the long-standing affair she had with her coworker Peter Strzok. It's kind of a big deal. It was the basis for their working together and their commiserating about Donald Trump's prospects to become president of the United States in the first place. Their text pillow talk. But I love the idea that she's the victim. And she's out there saying she didn't do anything wrong. She never did anything close to treason or anything remotely wrong. Trying to get out ahead of the Inspector General's report. We still have a little more than a week before that thing comes out, or maybe a little less than a week. It's coming out, it's supposed to be out on the 9th, I think, so that's Monday. So we got a little less than a week before that comes out, and I suspect we're going to hear a lot more about it, a lot more stories. This story in the Washington Post seems designed to show or imply or give the impression that the Trump partisan hacks will not be happy with this. And therefore, you know, the liberals, there's nothing in this report. They want to lower expectations, that this report somehow exonerates wrongdoing because the Trump partisans are unhappy with it. And they think, well, that's going to mean something to somebody. No, just wait until the report comes out. Read the report for yourself, or wait till you get legitimate reporting on the report. This preemptive game that Washington does, they think they're being clever. They think they're being smart. And a long time ago, before the internet, this would have been the clever strategy. This would have been the way to go. You get out in front of a story. Now stories move so fast and everybody has access to it. Before the internet, you just basically had to take whatever reporters summation was, whatever they decided to highlight from a report, that was all you got, unless you wrote to your member of Congress and specifically requested the entire document, or went to a library somewhere and read the entire document, which nobody did. You just had to take their word for it. They left a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. Now they can't leave anything on the cutting room floor because the internet is the cutting room floor, and there will be people combing through that thing with a fine-tooth comb, a flea comb, to find all the nuggets. And the left will highlight the pieces that make their case, and the right will highlight the pieces that make our case, and nothing will change. No minds will change. The only thing that will change anybody's mind is the further investigation, the criminal investigation, and if there are actual criminal charges brought. That the left won't be able to ignore, even though they'll try to, they'll want to, they'll undercut it, they'll undersell it, they'll gloss over it as quickly as possible. They'll give anybody, if they're ultimately charged, they'll give anybody the benefit of the doubt that they have never given the president of the United States, that they never gave Roger Stone, that they never gave Paul Manafort, that they never gave Michael Flynn, that they have not given to anybody named Trump or who works with Trump. They will insist on every benefit of the doubt, and you will hear qualifiers like you wouldn't believe, and alleged to have done this, appear, they claim, the Justice Department says, blah, blah, blah. They will qualify it with everything they possibly can to undercut it and then quickly move on because they won't want to talk about it because it will make their entire case even shakier than it is. So I don't want to comment a whole lot on this breaking story tonight, mostly because we don't know. It's anonymous sources claiming various things. The Inspector General isn't officially commenting. The Justice Department is not commenting. Is it true? We don't know. And as we've seen in the media, just because anonymous sources say something is so, doesn't necessarily make it so. In fact, it oftentimes makes it not so. And on that charming note, I'm going to leave that right there just because I don't like wild speculation. There are enough podcasts out there that do nothing but wildly speculate about everything under the sun. You can listen to them. They're more popular than this one anyway. And if you need a conspiracy theory fixed, they're out there. I give you educated guesses, but I label it as educated guesses. The other ones can tell them blow all the smoke up your butt if that's what you're into. I'm just not into that. I quit smoking a long time ago. In other related news in the media world, this is kind of funny. You remember Bloomberg News announced that they were not going to investigate Michael Bloomberg, their owner, now that he's announced that he's running for president. They will not do any journalism whatsoever when it comes to Michael Bloomberg, his family, or his foundation, his fortune, essentially. He's not going to go out there. They are not going to look into anything. You got an allegation of corruption against Michael Bloomberg. Don't take that to a reporter at Bloomberg News. They're not interested in it. And they'll just put their fingers in their ears and go, la, 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 not interested. To avoid the obvious problems with that and the being called a hack organization and a biased organization against every other Democrat in the field to favor their boss, Bloomberg announced that they would extend that policy to everybody in the Democratic field. They are not interested, nor will they be investigating anybody in the Democratic field. They're done with that. They're essentially done with journalism. And it's really shocking to see them say that, but that's how they are. That's who they are. That's what they do. At the same time, when they announced that they would not be investigating any Democrat to make it fair, they included that they would, in fact, continue investigating Donald Trump and the Trump administration and the Trump campaign. So any rumors and innuendo you got against them, send them on to Bloomberg News. Well, with that news, the Trump campaign, now it took about a week, and I think this is the smart way to play it, said that they're going to pull the credentials. They're no longer going to offer credentials to people from Bloomberg News because they've come out and said, we're only going to investigate the Trump campaign. We're not going to go after any Democrat, no matter what we find. If other places, they find it, sure, we'll talk about it, but we're just going to excerpt it. We're not going to go along with it. The Trump campaign came out and said, well, then we're not going to give you credentials to come to our campaign events. It's that simple. They're not being denied access to the White House. They are still in the White House. But on the campaign trail where these campaigns have control because they're not official government entities, they're not interested in it. They're going to decide, they said in the statement, Brad Parscale said that they'll determine whether to engage with individual reporters or answer inquiries from Bloomberg News on a case-by-case basis. That's the smart play. With that in mind, the New York Times decided to come in and join the fracas. The executive editor of the New York Times released a statement, Dean Baquet. You know he's a serious person because he pronounces his name that is spelled Beckett with a French ending to it. So that lets you know just how serious he is. They said, quote, Bloomberg News is one of the largest and most influential news organizations in the world. We condemn any action that keeps quality news media from reporting fairly and accurately on the presidency and the leadership of the country, end quote, said Baquet in a statement. But they're not stopping Bloomberg from reporting on the president and the president's official duties. A campaign rally is not an official duty. A campaign rally is, wait for it, it's a campaign event. That's why the word campaign is used. And it is a separate entity entirely from the presidency, except when Democrats do it, and then nobody seems to care or notice. But I do love how the New York Times comes in and defends it. The New York Times has not come in and condemned Bloomberg News for announcing to the world that they were done doing journalism when it comes to the Democratic field because their boss is running for president. There was no interest in that. There was no condemnation of that. There was no concern about, the tarnishing, the further tarnishing of the industry, the news industry, by Bloomberg announcing this and their boss running for president and them, the people who presumably know them best, saying that they will not investigate him at all under any circumstances. No pushback from the New York Times at all on that one. But the Trump campaign says, well, all right, if you're going to treat us differently than you're treating Democrats, treat our campaign differently than you're treating Democrats, we're not going to give you credentials. You're welcome to get in line, stand in line, show up to the events, knock yourself out. But we're not playing this game. That's a bridge too far for the left and the leftists at the New York Times. It's kind of telling, don't you think? What's also kind of telling is Meathead. Meathead is Rob Reiner, for those of you who never watched reruns of All in the Family. I couldn't say he's a big Hollywood director because he hasn't had a hit in a very long time. But he's a director in Hollywood who used to be a big deal, and now he's just kind of a bumbling moron who makes really bad movies. Think of Gary Marshall, who made The Runaway Bride and Pretty Woman. And something else. I can't remember what the other one is. But he had these movies that were hits. And then he had these movies that were hits, but spelled with an S at front in the front of the word hits. They were just total piles, steaming piles of it. And he's just been around and sort of dining out on his past glories, which, actually, come to think of it, politics has a lot of people like that, and so does Hollywood. Well, he has a Twitter account as well, and for all the liberals who clutch their pearls every time the president tweets, they don't seem to mind or notice or get as upset when one of their own tweets something incredibly stupid that is damaging to their cause. I'm glad they don't. This means to me that he speaks for them. He took to his Twitter account and said the following, quote, "Every elected Republican knows that this president is guilty of countless impeachable offenses, but they, along with many white evangelicals and white supremacists, have made a pact with Putin. But unlike a pact with the devil, this one can be unsigned." Did you notice the subtle tie that he did in there? The way that he wove together white evangelicals and white supremacists, equating religious Christians with white supremacists, putting them on the same par. Why? Because that's how Hollywood liberals view anybody who isn't one of them. Anybody who believes in God, whether you're a regular churchgoer or not, well, you've got to be some sort of evangelical lunatic, and all you want to do is burn gay people and make sure that women never have abortions. And that's all you are. You're bucktooth or toothless and stupid. You pick up your dates at your family reunion. That's who you are. You're not enlightened like we progressives. That's the mentality. That is full on display there. What Rob Reiner is doing is something that actually has a long storied tradition in the Democratic Party, which is to declare anybody who disagrees with them to be a racist. You know, you're a racist, now vote for me. You're a sexist, now vote for me. You're an Islamophobe, you're a homophobe, you're a Triskaidekaphobe, whatever it is, now vote for me. It's not a particularly effective strategy, I would think, from an electoral standpoint, but this is who they are. This is what they believe. If you are not one of them, you are not the opposition, you are their enemy. And as such, their enemy is the worst. They are free to project. Now, Rob Reiner more than likely doesn't come in contact with any conservatives at all, mostly because who'd want to be in room with this human being, this person, this creature who is so joyless. You know, you'd think a guy who made his bones in comedy wouldn't be so damn joyless, but he is. So most people don't want to be around him. But they're also, if it's a conservative, and they are probably a secret conservative, because out in Hollywood, that's almost the only way you can get work, unless you're a really well-established actor. You don't want to be around Rob Reiner because you might say something. You might laugh at a joke that one of the crew members makes and be a little, you know, he's suspected of being a conservative. I've got to keep an eye on that one. Is there a way we can have somebody standing by just in case that actor turns out to be a conservative? We're going to have to crawl through every social media post. We're going to have to talk to family and friends to find out whether or not this person forget voting for Donald Trump. What if they voted for Mitt Romney? Even having voted for Mitt Romney in 2012 is a bridge too far, and they therefore must be destroyed. That's the mentality. And Rob Reiner is dumb enough, but rich enough to do it. It's kind of funny because Mark Ruffalo, the guy who played the Hulk in the Marvel movies, he's made other movies, but nothing put him in the public mind like the Marvel movies did. Those were wildly successful. He makes $8 million a movie, and he was tweeting over the weekend about how we need to destroy capitalism because it is destroying people's lives, it is destroying the planet, and it is killing people. He's worth $30 million. His net worth is $30 million. And you have this guy whining about capitalism. Now, if you've ever heard Mark Ruffalo speak, his own words, not words put into his mouth, it's a testament that he is worth so much, that Rob Reiner is worth so much. Rob Reiner's worth a fortune. They're a testament to the miracle of capitalism. Now, Rob Reiner comes from money. His father, Carl Reiner, was a big TV guy going back to the 50s and probably a radio guy before that. Wildly famous, incredibly talented, certainly much more so than his son. Made a fortune with Mel Brooks. But the fact that these people are not only wildly successful, that they have homes, that they're able to eat, that in and of itself, given their level of intelligence, is a testament to the greatness of capitalism. Yet they want to destroy it. They want to tear it down, all in the name of justice, of course. Justice. No justice, no peace. Okay, how about no peace, no justice? Can we try that one? Maybe you guys could stop trampling on the Constitution, and then we can sit around and listen to your perverted definition of justice and maybe brainstorm a little ways about how, if it's good, we could possibly work towards it. But instead, they want it the other way around. These morons, these leftists, really their whole lives are testaments to the greatness of capitalism and the greatness of the United States of America, that somebody as once talented as Rob Reiner, as a director. I didn't think he was all that talented as Meathead, but maybe that was because it was horribly out of date when I was watching it. The comedy didn't really translate or stick up. But the other one, what the hell is it? I'm blanking on his name. Mark Ruffalo. Yes. Mark Ruffalo. That Mark Ruffalo, who really does, he has the charm of a sea slug. He really does. He's got nothing. He brings nothing to the table. And he's worth $30 million. If that's not a testament to the beauty and miracle of capitalism, then nothing is. And if Mark Ruffalo can do it, anybody can do it. And you don't have to make, that's the thing that the left lives in. You know, you're not going to make $30 million. No, probably not going to make $30 million. Maybe, though. Maybe. But what most people want, and what the left doesn't understand, is we're not all jealous of Mark Ruffalo and want to take Mark Ruffalo's $30 million away from him and have it for ourselves. We are, we just want to be left alone. We want to have enough that we can get by, and that's it, right? You want to be able to make your mortgage payment, take care of your kids, take care of your family, make sure that everything you got is paid for and up to date, and you're able to get by and pack a little bit away for savings for when you retire. We don't all have to be, nor really want to be, millionaires or billionaires, or else we would take risks because there are obvious paths to becoming a millionaire or a billionaire that involve mostly founding companies. We all have ideas. We've all brainstormed ideas, whether it's over beers or something else with friends, particularly when you're younger, and you throw these ideas out there, and some of them are stick. Some of them will go, you know what, that's a pretty good idea. And sometimes you see them in the stores. You go, damn it, I should have done something with that. Well, you probably should have done something with that. But the people who get filthy rich take that risk, take that chance. And for every company you see that has a new idea on the shelves, there are 15 or 20 that didn't make it. That's how capitalism works. These leftists seem to think that they want socialism. I love Mark Ruffalo's, oh, people have died in the name of capitalism. Not really, but if you really want to do a body count comparison, let's look at socialism, let's look at communism, let's look at fascism, the whole progressive umbrella, let's look at all of it and do a comparison in the number of bodies that those philosophies have racked up rather than in capitalism. And it is, what, 50 million, actually 100 million, more than 100 million because they don't give an accurate count. So you know they're lowballing those numbers versus what? I'll give them a dozen. So I'll go with the dozen over 100 million dead any day of the week. That's just me. I'm old-fashioned that way. Speaking of old-fashioned, oh, Joe Biden. He's still just creeping along as a Democratic Party frontrunner. He is slow and unstable, wins the race, apparently, over there. But he's got the name recognition, and that's really all you need as a Democrat. So he's still out in the front, but he's got to actually campaign. So we're getting closer and closer to people actually voting. They've tried to keep him under wraps. They've tried to keep him quiet, tried to keep him down for as long as they possibly could, because I think that the key to Joe Biden's success is less and less people seeing him, to be perfectly honest with you. So now that they've got to go out there, they've got a bus tour going. And it's not just a regular old bus tour. It's the, and I feel weird saying this, it's like old timey. It's like those guys who used to call every, you know, in those movies from the 40s where everybody's Mac. Listen, Mac, what are you talking about, Mac? That's really where it comes from. It's the No Malarkey tour. I'm not making that up. He has it written across the side of a tour bus. He really does. Right there, big letters, No Malarkey. And if that weren't enough, he keeps on saying it. Now, there's probably a constituency for this that thinks, well, it's very cute and endearing, and Joe Biden is just Joe being Joe. And I do have to say that I thought that Joe Biden was getting a bad rap when he bit his wife's, when he didn't bite, when he nibbled on his wife's finger. She's talking the other day at a campaign event, and she kind of puts her hand out. It's right in his face where he's standing, and his fingers, her fingers are right there. So he kind of just nibbles on her fingers, like, hey, playfully, watch what you're doing, and while you're doing this, I'm going to do this. That he got a lot of crap for that, as that's some sort of senile thing. I actually looked at that as kind of cute. That's, you know, an old married couple. They've been married for 43 years. They still like each other, and good on them for that. I'm not going to hold that against him. But using the word malarkey, that's a little bit different. And listen to him try and sell it, try and explain it. And I think he's trying to be a little bit too cute by half here.
Folks, I'm on what we're referring here because I guess it's my Irish ancestry that when my grandfather would really think something was full of you-know-what, he'd say, that's a lot of malarkey. So we're on a No Malarkey tour, meaning we're telling the truth. We're not going to lie.
The No Malarkey tour. Yeah, he's really going after the youth vote out there, isn't he? Malarkey. What's funny about Joe Biden's No Malarkey tour, and I think he's just trying to be too cute. He's trying to embrace the, look, I'm an older guy kind of vibe, but his problem is that he's senile. It's weird because he remembers what his grandfather used to say, and isn't being able to recall things from your youth, but not being able to recall things from recent times part of dementia? I don't know. Maybe that's just my misunderstanding of dementia, but it strikes me as that a lot of dementia patients can recall things from when they were kids, but not recall things from when they were vice president, for example. That's just me. But anyway, on the No Malarkey Express, they really do. They have a big bus Joe Biden. It just says Joe, no malarkey, Biden for president. And then on the back of the bus, not actually on the back, but at the back of the side of the bus, since it's not 1920 any longer, they have the word malarkey along with its definition. So if you're sitting out there, it's going, what is malarkey? I assume it's BS, but what is it? Well, malarkey, they say noun, and then they have the pronunciation ma-lar-key, noun, insincere or foolish talk. So there will be no insincere or foolish talk. Why? If anybody tries that, he'll give them the business and tell them what for. I don't know how he could be more old-fashioned and make his age more prominent. What could he possibly do to make himself appear older? He's already got those weird teeth. Those are probably falsies. They could fall out, I suppose. He could embrace his baldness and get rid of the last vestiges of his plugs. He could call everybody Mac and talk about how swell things are and, you know, wear a straw hat and suspenders, put a big old piece of weed in his, not marijuana, but a weed in his mouth, and just walk around and talk about back in my day, we used to sit around and make our own jam, blah, blah. I don't know how he could make himself seem older. Now, there's a constituency for that, and there's a strategy behind it. I just don't know that it's a winning one. Caucus voters in Iowa tend to be older. They have the patience to sit there for a very long time and try to come to a consensus on in the caucus, because you have to argue, you have to physically be there, you have to physically, voters for this person go into this area, voters for that person go into that area. Caucuses, if you don't live in a caucus state, count your lucky stars, and you'll never really understand, because you have to be there for sometimes hours and hours and hours to have your vote counted in a caucus. It's really kind of just a stupid thing to do. You could just go to ballots, but they don't. They like their tradition. So the people who have the time, if not the energy, but the time to go and spend a lot of time caucusing, they tend to be older. They have the patience to do it. What are they going to do? They look at voting as their civic duty, whereas younger people show up, and if it's 5 minutes, they go, this sucks. Why is this taking so long? I feel oppressed. I need to call a press conference and talk about how my rights are being violated. Why, wah, wah, whine, piss, moan. So maybe there's that strategy to it. I just can't imagine that there are many people in their 70s who think that somebody else in their 70s should be running the show, or somebody who'd be the oldest person ever elected president, ever sworn in. He'd be older than Ronald Reagan was when he left office, if he were to take office as president of the United States in 2021. That's how old Joe Biden is. Reminding people of that really, I don't think of as a particularly smart campaign strategy. That being said, Joe Biden isn't really known for smart campaign strategies. There's a reason he's lost the two other times in humiliating fashion that he's run for president of the United States. You know what, before we get to the Zuckerberg thing, I don't want to actually, if I can avoid talking about that Zuckerberg thing for very long, I think that'd be a better way to go. I want to point out a little bit of Democratic corruption. This is something that I've pointed out before, how this works. Remember, these people are the ones who make the rules, and they make them to favor themselves. Not just in their reelection strategy, but in their lives and livelihood. The Washington Free Beacon has this story. Democratic Representative Gregory Meeks of New York continues to push tens of thousands of dollars from his campaign coffers to a company owned by the wife of his district chief of staff, Federal Election Commission records show. Meeks' campaign committee has managed to raise cash even though he has not faced any real opposition in his heavily Democratic New York district. During the 2000s, see, this is it. These are the people, and it's Republicans and Democrats. Just the examples are of Democrats, like Maxine Waters. Never really. She wins 70-80% of the vote, yet she'll raise a fortune. And she'll spend that fortune on campaign-related activities. She'll hire her children, for example, as she's done, to work various campaign-related jobs and pay them quite well to do it, even though she doesn't have a campaign to speak of. She can raise the money. She can spend the money to hire staff. Why not hire family? Why not keep that money in the family? And it's not considered a bribe, which we all would view it as in normal circumstances. It's considered legitimate campaigning. Meek's campaign has managed to raise cash even though he's not faced real competition in heavily Democratic New York district. During the 2008 election cycle, Meek's faced two Democratic challengers but ran away with the primary, capturing 81% of the vote. He ran unopposed in the general election. Now, isn't that lovely? He runs unopposed. Why would he raise money? We know why people would give him money, but why would he go out and raise money? He needs $50,000. That's about it. And then he's got it covered. Meek's lack of any significant opposition has allowed his campaign to also spend generously on credit cards, DC consultants, horse racing venues, and a luxury car luxury car expenses instead of advertisements and other typical expenses associated with competitive campaigns. Isn't that lovely? Lifestyle things. Meeks reported more than $1 million in total receipts during the 2018 cycle. Of that money, nearly $800,000 was transferred from other committees, including the National Association of Realtors, Political Action Committee, Deloitte Political Action Committee, and the BlackRock Funds Service Group, LLC Political Action Committee. His campaign spent nearly as much as it raised. Meeks, who will not face any opponent in the 2020 cycle, has raised $644,000 throughout the first three quarters of the year, filings show. His committee has so far spent $384,000, including money that has gone to the company owned by his wife's aide. A New York business records show that AINA, E-I-N-N-A, Incorporated, is registered to Patsy Simmons, who acts as Meek's campaign treasurer, a typically unpaid position. Patsy Simmons is married to Robert Simmons, Meek's deputy district chief of staff in his Jamaica, New York office. Meek's campaign committee has made three payments to AINA, totaling $22,500 so far this year. His campaign filings show AINA was paid another $4,000 by Meek's leadership PAC. The new payments this cycle come on the heels of $60,000 Meek pushed into the company during the 2018 cycle. Since the 2010 campaign, he has paid AINA more than $200,000. Isn't that lovely? What are they getting for this money? They aren't running a campaign. They don't even have an opponent. Yet this money is being shuffled around and changing hands, and it's all, you know, legitimate business, legitimate campaign thing, because they set the rules. Meek's largest disbursements this year have gone towards American Express credit card payments, nearly $125,000. Now, how do you rack up with no opponent in your campaign? How do you rack up $125,000 in credit card bills without an opponent just this year alone? This year is 2019 for those of you playing the home game. And lining the pockets of consultants, nearly $55,000 to Anger Holzer Bros Consulting. Meeks spent $10,000 in late May on catering and site rental at the New York Racing Association's Belmont Park, the venue of horse racing's Belmont Stakes, which took place 1 week after the campaign's payments. Meeks also dropped more than $9,000 from his campaign on monthly lease payments and car services on a Lexus, which is reported as a campaign vehicle. Quite a scam, isn't it? The campaign spent more than $20,000 on luxury car payments during the last election cycle. Shockingly, Meek's campaign did not return requests for comment from the Washington Free Beacon. They don't answer questions. They're not going to. The Washington Free Beacon, that can be easily dismissed. If anybody at a real, quote unquote, real news organization, somebody at the New York Times says, why don't you ask Gregory Meeks about that? Well, that's a Washington Free Beacon story. What are you going to do? That's just who they are. How do you spend that much money? Where does it go? What are you getting for that money? What is this consulting that you get? How do you rack up $120,000 on your Amex card campaigning when you don't have a political opponent? Who are you running against? Where are you going? What are you doing? We may never know, because the only people who will ever bother to ask will be dismissed as, oh, those are right-wingers. That's who they are. They're probably some sort of racist. They're probably some sort of monster. We don't have to answer to that. This is how things work. Everything we did was perfectly legal. Yeah, because you set the rules. You create the rules. You find ways to line your pockets. And, you know, I'm not saying, by the way, that he's taking money here. He's too smart. They're too smart to pay themselves or to get money directly into their pockets. But are you telling me that $120,000 worth of what? You got to assume meals. You got to assume air travel and car rental and the luxury car that they rent and all of those things. You aren't telling me that otherwise those things would have had to have been paid for by Congressman Meeks. He doesn't have to pay for those things. We just go out to dinner and we say, well, we talk about the campaign. How's your campaign coming along? Don't have an opponent, Bob. Things are going great. All right. Now, this isn't officially a campaign-related lunch or dinner or whatever. We're going to use the campaign credit card and pick this tab up. That's how the scam works. He spends lobbyists' money that was given to his campaign on his daily life. You can't show up to campaign events dressed like a bum. The campaign requires that you dress well. It's a necessity. Therefore, the campaign can pick up the tab for such things. All of those sort of little bitty little things, that's a couple hundred here, a couple thousand there, those add up to $120,000, $125,000 in Amex cards for routine disbursements, routine things. And that money does not come out of the congressman's pocket. It is bribery. It is embezzlement. It is perfectly legal because it's done under the guise of campaigns, a campaign that doesn't need to be run because he has no opponent whatsoever. Remember that next time you hear they say, well, we need public financing of campaigns. Why? So people like Greg Meeks, who don't even have opponents, can take our tax money directly rather than have to take payoffs from lobbyists? These are the people who want to get money out of politics. It's always the people who want to get money out of politics who make the most money while they're in politics. Isn't that weird? I find that incredibly weird. It's almost like they're hypocrites or frauds or something, but they wouldn't do that. They couldn't be that, could they? These are good, honest, hardworking folks who are just out there doing their jobs, or so they continually tell us. Speaking of frauds and phonies and everything, CBS News. CBS News has an interview with Mark Zuckerberg and his wife. They basically ignored the wife in the first part of the interview. They're supposedly this morning going to run into the wife and talk about the charitable work that they're doing. But in general, they just wanted to get together with Mark Zuckerberg, as you might imagine, because he's the founder of Facebook. And Gayle King, Oprah's friend, Oprah's buddy. God, it's good to be good to be an Oprah friend. You don't really have any discernible talents or abilities, but you get jobs because they think Oprah might show up around the office one day. Well, Gayle King sat down with Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, whatever her name is, I don't really care. You're not going to hear her voice in this thing anyway. Priscilla Chan, I guess it is. And she wanted to know, and the liberals are very, very upset by this. They want Facebook to be another branch of them. And in many ways, it is. They want it to be another tentacle or a head on the hydra that is the liberal establishment. And again, in many ways, it is. You mention certain things on Facebook political-wise, and suddenly your post is deleted, or you get a notification that you must delete your post, or else they'll ban you, they'll suspend you, they'll do whatever. Twitter just straight up bans you, and you're screwed if you mention something that they don't like. But Gayle King and the liberal establishment wants Facebook to be the arbiter of what is and is not truth. Now, imagine some 25-year-old, never-kissed-a-girl nerd, only sees sunlight by accident kid out there, liberal, trying to fit in with all the liberals out in Silicon Valley, deciding what is and is not acceptable political speech, and what is and is not true and accurate political speech. You can see a world of problems that would open for Facebook. And Facebook is in a situation where they are desperately trying to avoid crossing the line into becoming a publisher. That's what Facebook's main objective is, because a publisher can be sued for the content that they publish if it is malicious. Now, Facebook becomes responsible for what their 3 billion or 4 billion or however many billion users they have for the things that they post. Well, you post something, so-and-so is a total garbage, child molesting jerk. And just because they broke up with somebody or had their heart broken or got something they wanted or whatever, you imagine, you see what people write anonymously. Imagine that, you know, what they write on Facebook. If they put that stuff on Twitter, God knows what they'll put on Facebook. The unhinged. Well, the unhinged person being responsible for that is perfectly fine with Facebook. They made the decision. They made the call. They're responsible for it. Facebook doesn't want to assume the liability for the, I don't know, 20% of people who are on Facebook who are clinically insane and unstable and going to write slanderous, libelous things. So they will not play that game when it comes to politics. They'll play it in other areas, but if you start doing things to politicians, they don't like that when they're held to standards, and Facebook is smart enough to recognize that. So they are not going to police political ads. It's a smart policy. And Mark Zuckerberg, when you hear these clips, has a smart answer for the reason behind that smart policy. Well, the left doesn't like that. They want Facebook to ban, they really want Facebook to ban Donald Trump ads, because Facebook was used very effectively by the Trump campaign last time, and there's no reason to doubt that they won't use it just as effectively this time. So they thought it'd be just much better if Facebook decided what is and isn't true and acted and governed accordingly so that they wouldn't have to do it. They're sick of having to spin and lie. If they just say Facebook banned this ad because it's a lie, they don't have to explain it. They don't have to do it. They don't have to call for it. Now, if they're going to call for it, they want Facebook to get on board. Well, Facebook said they're not going to delete it. If an ad is untrue, they can run it. Politicians can run it. Politicians of all parties, because every politician at least exaggerates, if not flat out lies, in their television commercials. It's a joke every 2 years when the political ads start running. But the left wants Facebook to do that because they really want to ban Donald Trump from social media. They're still pushing to get Donald Trump banned from Twitter, saying that he is violating the terms of service and he should therefore be banned from Twitter. CNN has been pushing for that for months. Now they're all kind of pushing to get the Trump campaign banned from Facebook, or at least their ads banned from Facebook. They want to limit the range. They want to muzzle the president of the United States. And Mark Zuckerberg is having none of it. Listen to Gayle King. This is how the interview starts. She circles back to this apple to take another bite 3 different times. This is the very first question from Oprah's friend to Mark Zuckerberg.
The main thing now that people are talking about are the political ads, that you don't want to take down political ads that people know are false, that they contain false information.
What I believe is that in a democracy, It's really important that people can see for themselves what politicians are saying so that they can make their own judgments. And, you know, I don't think that a private company should be censoring politicians or news.
Mark Zuckerberg's answer is absolutely right there. You know what? People can decide for themselves. People should be able to hear what these people have to say and decide on their own whether they think it's BS or malarkey or whether they think they're telling the truth. All of them, no politician tells the truth all the time. That's just fake. That's a fraud. But don't you love the way Gail starts this off? The thing people are talking about now. Have you heard anybody, if you don't work in Washington, D.C. or New York, if you do not work in politics, have you heard anybody talk about Facebook's policy about political ads? Think about it for a second. Have you heard any human being talk about Facebook's policy regarding political ads? The answer you're looking for is no. No, you haven't. Normal people are not talking about it, but it's an indication of just how insulated Oprah's friend Gail King's world is. People are talking about it nonstop. Why, I was at a dinner party in the Upper West Side of Manhattan the other day in a glorious three-story apartment that is about 15,000 square feet, and all people kept talking to me about was Facebook's policy about political ads. I mean, not the servants. The servants knew not to talk to any of the guests. They just served the drinks and avoided eye contact, lest they be beaten. But the other people, all of the fabulously wealthy celebrities and billionaires, they wouldn't shut up about Facebook's policy. No one outside of Manhattan and Washington, D.C. gives a crap about Facebook's policy regarding political ads. That being said, you can see why CBS is the ratings juggernaut for news that it is. That being said, while Zuckerberg's answer was absolutely right on, people can say what they want and the public will have to decide. Maybe take a little bit of responsibility for themselves, do a little homework, think for themselves. That being said, Oprah's friend circles back again.
But a small group of your employees, about 200, wrote a letter saying that they wish that you would reconsider because they said free speech and paid speech are not the same. Do they have a point?
Well, this is clearly a very complex issue, and a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. At the end of the day, I just think that in a democracy, people should be able to see for themselves what politicians are saying.
Even if the ads are containing false information,
People should be able to judge for themselves the character of politicians.
Again, that's the exact right answer. Of 200 of your employees out of the, 10,000? 200, a rounding error from a percentage standpoint, are unhappy with this. And that's who she's bringing up. Why? Because it's what Gail King cares about. That's why. That's the only reason to keep asking a question that you've already gotten the answer to. Now, you can say a lot of things about Mark Zuckerberg, but that question that Gail King asked the first time, she got an answer to. She didn't like the answer, so she doubled back. She's now arguing with him. She's not interviewing with him. She's trying to convince him to her way of thinking. Yeah, but there are a lot of people, employees and everything. Look, shouldn't you do this? I mean, come on. Shouldn't you do this? Translation? Oprah wants this. And if Oprah wants something, Oprah gets something. That's the way it is. That's how I've lived my whole life. So once again, she circles back. She talks about the private dinner that he had at the White House while he was in town, Mark Zuckerberg had with the president. And she wants to know what went on in there. Did the president pressure you? Is that why you're doing this? Did the president pressure you? Here's the audio.
You were in D.C. recently. It was reported later that you had dinner with the president of the White House. What was the nature of the meeting? Can you say?
Sure. I mean, we talked about a number of things that were on his mind and some of the topics that you'd read about in the news around our work.
The dinner was not disclosed by the White House and only became public after the fact through news reports. It came as President Trump was openly discouraging Facebook from banning political ads.
Listen, people would say the optics weren't good. Did he try to lobby you in any way?
No. I mean, I don't think that's... I think some of the stuff that people talk about or think gets discussed in these discussions are not really how that works. I also want to respect that it was a private dinner, right, and it's a private discussion.
People say the optics weren't good. What people, Gail? who says the optics weren't good of the CEO of a major U.S. corporation accepting an invitation to have dinner with the President of the United States? Who would reject that invitation? Well, your boss over at CBS and probably your contemporaries and everybody at those cocktail parties in Manhattan, but normal people would not. Normal people would go, okay, I don't like the guy, but I'm going to go. Or I like the guy and I'm honored to go. But in Gayle King's world, you only jump when Oprah says jump. Everything else can wait. Everything else is secondary. It must bow to the will of Oprah. Don't you love that presumption? Well, the optics of that are bad. What, an American citizen, a multi-billionaire, wildly successful American success story, having dinner at the White House, talking about important issues facing the country in a large section of the economy, that is optically bad to Gayle King? Again, she wants him to just come back and say, okay, fine, I will do your bidding, Gayle. I will do Oprah's bidding. I will bow down before you. It's not journalism. You don't ask a question three or four times that you got an answer to each time you asked it, unless you're trying to persuade, unless you're arguing with the person. There's a lot of words for that. Not a one of them is journalism. That's CBS News for you. Anyway, that is all the time we have today, unfortunately. Email me, Derek at dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, whatever you got. This episode seemed a little poppy in my voice. Perhaps I need to adjust the microphone yet again, but I appreciate you sticking it out and sticking it out with this program. We'll be back here on Wednesday. It's already Wednesday tomorrow. Well, today is Tuesday, but it's already going to be Wednesday tomorrow. That's good, man. Time is just flying. Christmas is a-coming. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's a lot of malarkey.